MGO Podcast 13.5. I'm not getting loosey-goosey about this 5-0 team. Are you?
My gears.
What grinds your gears, Brian?
When I predict a road victory over Wisconsin, and people are constantly telling me that I'm too negative.
Well,
Wisconsin was favored in this game.
I was the one saying that we were going to lose 10-0, so they should be coming at me, not you. And two, we were too negative because we were like 12-10 because Wisconsin's quarterback's
not great. No. That was not... So, like, if you had told me that we would get a full... half of the Chase Wolf experience, I think I would have gone a little bit bigger in terms of Michigan's victory.
Was Chase Wolf that much better than Graham Mertz, other than like when Graham Mertz...
Do you mean worse?
Huh?
Do you mean worse?
Yeah.
Yes, he was worse.
Okay. Other than when Graham Mertz went into Tom Brady mode.
The very next play, he threw an interception, and he threw 8 passes in this game, one of which was intercepted, and he lowered his overall... interception rate for his career.
Okay.
So, yes.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm Brian Cook.
I'm Seth Fisher.
And I am not pessimistic. I'm still not approaching the football. That's not what's going to happen here.
Yes.
But Michigan, I don't know what this actually means, but they apparently Fetty Wopped.
Yeah.
This is a...
That was a Fetty Wopping.
A ring. I don't know why that's a thing, but it was 38-17, and apparently this makes Roger Sherman of The Ringer very, very excited. So I'm sure he was happy that day as he watched his Northwestern Wildcats get absolutely...
By Nebraska.
So at least he had some joy in yesterday's action. But we'll start with the offense.
Can we start with the sponsors, actually?
Oh, fine. Do you want to get paid for this? If you insist, the MGO Podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products, including hockey jerseys. Check out ugpmichiganapparel.com or mgoblogstore.com. We also want to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Signal Wire, and Prentice 4M, where we are right now. All right.
Where are we right now?
We are in the podcast room.
No, I mean, like, where in our Michigan fandom?
Oh.
In cosmically, where are we?
Well, so, like, in the beginning of the year,
yes,
I predicted 7-5.
Yes.
And a lot of people predicted 7-5. That was because people thought that Michigan might have one of the hardest schedules in college football, which they clearly do not.
Right.
So, Washington, Wisconsin, Northwestern, no.
I mean,
Indiana's coming in well under expectations.
Yeah, too. That's the one that I think is well under. Like, Wisconsin, Graham Mertz was not good.
Well, but you still, like, expect you get default Wisconsin things.
Right, right.
Which you don't.
Yeah.
You don't get them these years. Because, like, you know, you go into this game and it's like, this is not a Wisconsin ground attack that we are used to seeing. So,
yeah.
You know, this was a 10-point spread in Wisconsin's favor preseason. It got down to 2 before the game. And as the game progressed, it was like, with that.
Yeah.
So, like, in the teams that are performing, I guess, better than expected are, like, Rutgers. And that means that Michigan wins that game by a smaller amount, right?
Yeah. I mean, Rutgers fell to Ohio State the same way we thought they would fall to Ohio State. Ohio State is another one of those teams that's underperformed expectations. Not that it's going to matter for us, but...
That's Lucy talk.
Okay.
There will be no Lucy talk on this podcast. If other people want to participate in Lucy talk, that's fine.
Fair enough.
I will maybe allow some after a hypothetical win over Penn State.
Okay.
That's when Lucy talk might be permitted.
All right.
But right now, Michigan has just beaten a 1-3 team. So I'm just keeping it level. I'm not going to say that there are no positives you can take from this game. I'm not going to say that this wasn't a meaningful win. But I am going to be, like, cautious.
Caution is advised. I mean, Washington
right, me,
is not good.
Let me change that.
Yes.
Extremely cautious.
You saw Cade McNamara throwing good passes this game.
Some of them were good.
More of them, I think, were good than he got credit for.
So let's talk about that. So
yeah.
In the first few drives of this game, I'm like, when is McCarthy coming in? And he's throwing behind. He's throwing late.
We'll look at the film again, but I kind of disagree. I think that, you know, there were a couple passes to where his receivers did not get the first down because it was on the receivers, and he threw it to the right spot. And, like, Sainer still, like, jumps up to get the ball a yard short. Like, that's not on McNamara that, like, that ball is short. And that was right where it needed to be. There was another one where it kind of looks like it's behind Johnson, but Johnson's supposed to sit right there, and the ball's out right away. Like, that play is it's a slant underneath a Corum swing pass. And everyone reacts to the Corum swing pass because that's what you do when Blake Corum's out on the edge. And it's right there underneath, but you can't go too far underneath because the linebackers are there. So he throws it in the right spot, and I thought Cornelius Johnson just overran it a bit.
If he threw it in the right spot, he threw it late. Because Cornelius Johnson needs to be catching that ball at the speed that he's moving, right? And if you put the ball behind him, that's not a route issue. That's a when did I get this ball out issue. I do agree with Joel Klatt about I think this was towards the end of the first half, where Dalen Baldwin's on a crossing route against zone.
Yes.
And he doesn't sit down.
Yeah.
And that one is behind him. And that one, I feel, was on Baldwin. But the first few drives, the things that were going on were frustrating. And I think you can directly trace that back to the quarterback. And the wide receiver play, I think, was overall fine. They're saying, like, you got to catch that ball in certain circumstances. And, like, no, you don't. Because when you look at, like, the replay of the wheel route, I mean, that gets ripped out.
That one I actually thought was on the quarterback.
Yeah.
Either you have to zip it in below before the safety gets there, or you have to test the safety deep and see if he can keep up with Donovan Edwards.
Right. So, like, there were a lot of throws there that get a lot of yards, and that was not one of them. And then, like, there were a couple of deep shots at Johnson that were incomplete, where he threw one into double coverage, and Johnson goes up for it.
Yeah.
That doesn't come down. And then there was
the sideline throw.
There was a back shoulder attempt that wasn't back shouldery enough.
There was another one where I kind of side with Cade, because Johnson looks around. He looks inside, which is what you're supposed to do. You could keep that cornerback inside. And I don't think he found the ball until late.
Yeah,
but that ball lands inbounds, which is where you want it to be.
Right, but he's being challenged by a defender. And so those are always very difficult passes to bring in.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're in the right spot, you can use your height and strength and rip the ball away fairly easily. But that was not the right spot for that. It needed to be shorter. So I think we're going to have a lot of debate in the entire fan base about what went on in this game.
Yeah.
Quarterback-wise. Now, there was a lot of good stuff, too. He hit the flea flicker completely perfectly. He had a really nice back shoulder throw to All.
Mm-hmm.
On, I think, Michigan's touchdown drive in the early third quarter, was that?
They're running together. There were 80 Michigan offensive plays this time, not 40.
That was a two-minute drive.
They're running together.
And then, like, he was able to improvise a little bit and find some guys, get out of the pocket, and perform. This was not a performance that really changed my equation about how nervous I am about Cade McNamara in a game where he has to go win it.
I mean, I went in this one from, oh my God, we don't even want to throw because the coaches don't trust Cade, to, okay, you know, this guy is going to give you average Big Ten quarterback play. I didn't say he was awesome.
I don't know about that.
But, like, I felt like he was confident. And it comes down to whether you thought he was throwing behind guys or whether it was the receiver's fault. But he was really hooking up well with Wilson, especially on that fourth down play, which is just out perfectly, exactly where it needs to be.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like America's rollout out.
Yeah.
You get like a little bit of a bonus for that, but it is fundamentally a four-yard pass.
But it's a hard throw.
He's rolling across.
Yes.
He's rolling away from his throwing arm, but that's not something that I get, like, la 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 about.
Yeah.
It's something that should be in a college quarterback's
And what about the deep pass that that Wilson brought in? I mean, that was a Wilson play. He's the one who can get credit
well,
for that
he,
one. But
I mean, he's getting – he can't step into that throw, so it's way short. And mm-hmm. Wilson makes, like, I don't really – I mean, that's fine, right? Like, give your receiver a chance. That ball is affected by the pressure.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Well, he took a shot on the Cornelius Johnson sideline one, too.
Well, yeah. That one I thought was less impacted. I thought that he had enough time to get that one off. But anyway, so – you're looking at a guy who I feel has been fairly inconsistent, has shown great touch on a deep ball. Like, you know, if you can get guys past the safeties, I thought they should have run the flu flicker again on the next drive to see what happened.
I mean, certainly because Wisconsin came out right away bringing that safety down. And Michigan came out right away throwing, knowing that they were going to do that. So
yeah, and then the throws were there and they weren't made. And so it kind of felt like a continuation of the Rutgers game. He got hit a couple times and like, all right, what's going on here? And then he recovered to his credit. And we've got, I guess, less of a quarterback controversy. But I still think that, you know, J.J. McCarthy might be coming. And that's because he had a pretty nice deep ball of his own. He's clearly more athletic. They can use him in the ground game. And this was a game where it really would have been useful to have something out of the quarterback from on the ground game.
That is true, especially
so aggressive. Especially like Seth. Do you know what I never want to see again? I never want to see split zone.
<one. laughs> I thought we were going to get to that in our special teams and fourth down segments.
No, I'm so tired.
What about split zone with the wide receiver as the kicker when he doesn't even make the block?
Do we all remember what happened when we had Ben Mason and we just ran ISO on third and one?
Uh-huh.
People
got mad at people were like, you're not being true to Eric All when I wrote, like, I had like a fullback. When Wisconsin just lined up, ran a fullback dive and converted a fourth and one or a third and one.
Right.
And I'm like, that's a useful guy to have. And that's not Eric All. You know, they've never once handed it off to Eric
All. That's not true. They did once. It was a terrible mistake and he fumbled in like a bowl game.
That wasn't Eric.
Oh, that wasn't Eric. All that was
no. That was another.
That was a different tight end. That shouldn't have been
different. Right.
But it's just, I think Michigan's third down performance this year in short yardage has been bad, outright bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's directly traceable to the fact that they don't have a fullback on the roster and they're running split zone. And in this game, you saw it over and over again where they gave a guy an impossible job.
Yeah.
So, like, you get Ryan Hayes chasing this guy to the running back, and that's not Ryan Hayes' fault. Because that guy is lined up inside of Ryan Hayes and slanting away from Ryan Hayes.
Yes.
And it is a miracle if he gets any part of that block. And he can't make miracles.
Yeah.
So, and they got to figure something out there. Because what they are doing is they're trying to, like, double defensive tackles. They're trying to duo it with split zone, and Wisconsin knows it's coming, and their guys are able to slant inside, and that's going to keep happening. That's what's happened against Rutgers, too, is, you know, whenever you're running a zone play and there's a guy chasing a guy who was lined up inside of him, you busted.
Right.
And the frequency with which Michigan is doing this, there's just no reason to run that play.
Yeah.
On a short yard situation.
I mean, they screwed it up one time on down G near the goal line as well. But that was, I mean, that's the same exact block. Schoonmaker, I think, just let a guy go across him.
Yeah, he just...
I think that was him not getting the play in or something.
Well, and they had a lot of issues trying to ID guys in this game. Mm-hmm. So, like, there were a lot of times when you'd have a gap block scheme and someone would pull and then two guys would go to the same Wisconsin player. So, I don't know if that's Jim Leonard disguising really well or just...
I mean, it's harder. We saw this on our side, too. It's harder to do that against a 3-4 than it is against a 4-3 because there's one more guy you don't know where he's going before the snap.
Well, in whatever case, Michigan's ground game here was functional in spurts, but the running backs have like a long and nine. They can't trust a long play. The two heading runs get approximately 0 yards between them. And this may be the best run defense in the country outside of Alabama and Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the way they hewed down the Henning run. Is their safety just screamed down at 100 miles per hour? Yeah. And like that's a play. That's a safety making
a
play.
Well, but that's what they do.
Yeah, and
Michigan had a couple of opportunities to mess with it, but I mean, they got the flea flicker off that action, right? Because the safety's like, got to get there. So they did punch back for the opening touchdown, almost enough points to win this game. Give or take a garbage time drive.
Yeah.
So it's not like it was all one-way traffic, but other teams came into this game and they were like, all right, we're barely going to try running the ball. And Michigan right. was still 44 runs versus 30 passes. And part of that's the game state, right? Because mm-hmm. Michigan's up the whole time, and their offense looks so horrible.
But we got Haskins through the line, and once Haskins has gotten, if you get Haskins 2-3 yards through that line, he can stumble for the extra two and make that into a good run. And he was doing that several times.
Yeah, but he averaged like 3 and change.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Corum just couldn't get going because he was just jammed up. And I think that going forward, that's what opponents are going to do. Like they saw what Rutgers did. You see what Wisconsin does. You were going to dare Cade McNamara to beat you.
Yeah. I mean, that's the play. One of the things, and this goes back to the Cade versus McNamara thing, is read options are off when Cade's out there. And they did turn it on for McCarthy. But when McNamara was out there, they were off. And they also gave him one of those pitch options where he just pitches it right away, where like the option's not even an option.
Yeah,
right.
Air quotes option.
But the defensive end went inside, not even bothering to get the quarterback. Like he was just shuffling way inside. So he could have kind of kept it and taken out another defender. But Michigan didn't even plan it that way. It was just a pitch.
And you see teams do that. They'll do sort of this counter speed option thing, which isn't a really speed option. It's just shuffle the end down and get a block. And they didn't really get a block on the outside, which is disappointing. But, you know, the context here I think is important because Wisconsin just might be that good. And
we saw Sanborn was, I mean, that guy is probably an All-American.
Tight end grades are going to be pretty ugly this week.
Yeah, yeah. That's what Wisconsin does. But, like, as soon as they brought in McCarthy, I think they ran a fake zone read with him, and then they ran a zone read with him. He breaks a tackle. He gets 6-7 yards out of it.
Well, he outran that safety. The safety's coming screaming down, and it's Cade McNamara. He's down in the background, in the back of field.
Yeah.
But he's able to get to the corner, set up a 3rd and short, you know. So there's definitely some upside there that you'd love to have your quarterback to have, because as we've seen many times, it just feels different when your quarterback is a legitimate rushing threat.
Yeah.
And
you watch Penn State, and, you know, he just gets to sit back there because the defensive ends don't want to come upfield, right? And that is just the difference between a quarterback who can beat you with his legs and one who can't.
Yep. Anything else we have for the offensive bits and nuggets?
McCarthy just loves to hit Baldwin at the end for a garbage touchdown that, like, sends us all back to our talks again. So
our recruiting rankings discussion. Well, yep. You know, it is what is. Like, they're only separated by a year, right? So this isn't going to be like
They're both technically freshmen. They're both using their freshman year right now because McCarthy got a red shirt and then he got a COVID shirt. So,
you mean McNamara? You keep getting
I keep doing that. McNamara, yeah. I wanted to shout out Roman Wilson. This was a kind of a breakout game for him.
Sure.
I mean, the going up and getting a ball when it's contested is not something we've really seen him do before. And his routes were crisp. His routes have been a problem before. So, I mean, he's in his second year. He was kind of starting from behind anyway. I mean, if this guy's coming, because he's got that talent, they do need a plan for Ronnie Bell after Ronnie, like, soon. And, you know, if you're going to have somebody who's got Ronnie Bell speed and might be able to give you that kind of game, maybe he's our best bet to kind of grow into that role.
Yeah, he did have the unfortunate step out of bounds on what was Van Chunk. But other than that,
true. So, yeah.
That's progress. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about the defense.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter. Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirt.com.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give Attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
And your stereo loud, flaunting your taste, blazing the space around you with love light and marigold sounds. Pray we live a long life, seeking our futures out. Playing your stereo loud, flaunting your taste, blazing the space around you with love light and marigold sounds. Pray we live a long life, seeking our futures out. Solaris, young lion, beacon of the sun, come brighten. You're the talk of the town, prince of the pride, titan of a mighty sound. My highness, will you come down? Getting a hold of you is like clutching a cloud, but none do surround when you come around. This bearer of lights wearing beams for a crown, bringing life.
Michigan's defense has a dominant outing, holding Wisconsin to 210 yards, a fair number of which are just total garbage yards, like they get a touchdown after intercepting Bowman. So, like, in the competitive section of this game, this is a team that...
Oh, God, and if you take out the two passes on the, at the very end of the half...
Can't like, do that. That was...
I know, but I'm like, those still were fairly good cover. I mean, the odds of both of them hitting?
Well, yeah, I mean, I felt like Hill... didn't really have a play on the ball on either of them. Like, he was real close on the first one, and then the second one, it was just like slot fade. You throw it like that, it's a touchdown. Mm-hmm. What did bother me on the first one is, like, what is Brad Hawkins doing? Like, Brad Hawkins needs to be over the top of that, because there's, I mean, if they hit a dig, who cares, right?
Right.
Like, the only way that they're going to get points is by going over your head, and so why is he setting up at 20 yards and not backtracking? Like, that route should have been bracketed.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that the play call didn't have, like, hey, let's have a deep safety in the middle of the field.
I mean, I can't tell you what happened, but I'm thinking that the transition costs are kind of coming in there, because
maybe
Brown used to have, like, his doubles coverage that he would use in that situation, and that would make sure that anyone deep gets bracketed like that. The fact that they're learning all these new coverages and they're practicing all these new coverages, they kind of just have to go into the coverage. I don't think that they are learning to vamp yet or, you know, do things off schedule.
Well, so, and the flip side of that, though, was the Dax Hill sack that knocked out.
Yes.
So that, I mean, that looked like the NFL right there.
Do you know what play that was? That was the same sack. That was the same blitz we used to use under Madison. Like, I think one of those famous ones is...
when Notre Dame scored a touchdown because Michigan had cover zero and the guy didn't go back? Because that's the one I remember.
I was going to give you some nice memories, Brian, like knocking out Western Michigan with Jordan Kovacs.
Right.
And also in Sugar Bowl, they ran the same blitz.
All right.
Yes.
In any case, so what you have there is you have a coverage radically changing just before the snap.
Mm-hmm.
They drop out David Ojabo, who has usually been going after the quarterback.
Right.
He runs under a tight end, and Mertz has to hesitate, and then he gets absolutely lit up by Hill. The kind of thing that we just didn't see under Don Brown very much, right? Where mm-hmm. the quarterback doesn't have anywhere to go because what he thought he was going to see is not what he saw. Now, it's an exaggeration to say that never happened.
Right. I was a constant complaint that Dr. Blitz was not Dr. Blitzing very much. And the reason was he would just get stuck in this man coverage. And then you only had so many pieces you could play with after you committed each of these guys to their men. And one of the things you can do with this whole zone coverage, the whole point of it, is that you can have different guys covering different people. And you only have to take away, especially in a blitz, the first two reads or the first read.
Yeah.
And it's over.
So he thought he had a hot, and he didn't have a hot, and then it was like the walls caved in.
Right.
So that is something that we haven't really seen as evocatively. Like, it's been going on this season, but like, if you want an example of how this defense differs from what Don Brown does, and when it's going well, what is going to happen, it's that play.
Yes.
So you have a cornerback rotating to safety real late. You have a defensive end dropping out underneath. You have a blitz coming from the field from Dax Hill. It's a lot to process for both an offensive line and a quarterback. It's also a lot to process for a defense.
Yeah.
But we haven't really seen, like, I know I mentioned that Hawkins got hit over the top right before the half. And that's like really the only candidate for oops, like huge bust we've had this season.
Yeah. I mean, like when I've gone through the UFRs, I find them once in a while and they're like, okay, you left a Rutgers receiver open, but that's like Rutgers receiver.
Sure.
But like the huge busts have not been there except for sometimes the linebackers come down because the linebackers are just playing the run so tight. But this also...
That's
not the same thing.
Play action, sucking up on play action is not,
right.
not executing.
Right. Well, that was my point, is that like we're not seeing these big coverage busts. I mean, the biggest problem with coverage has just been they play off sometimes. And I think Turner maybe did it once in this game, but that was mostly gone. And I also want to point out with that blitz, I think that's the best use of Josh Ross. He is a A-plus blitzer. He is like a B-minus linebacker. And then not great in coverage. So when you're using him on blitzes like that, because on that one too, he took one step and then went inside. So he was actually he didn't come in unblocked. He just went right past his blocker, and he's done that a lot this year. So, I mean, to be able to access the best parts of Josh Ross, we were really worried going into the season, like, what's the linebacker play going to be like? And I think he's playing really well. I think Nakai Hill-Green has found a really good role as like the guy who sits back and then charges at whatever he sees. And then another game for Colson where they are using him in the regular rotation where he's picking things up faster, and he's kind of just become a regular part of this defense now. So, like, linebackers, if they're a B-level now, that is a huge upgrade from where I thought we would be.
Yeah, and then Michigan has 6 sacks in this game, and somehow none of them were Aiden Hutchinson's.
I have a feeling when I UFR, a few of them are going to be. I can think of one where he and Ojabo both came off the edges, both beat their guys, and Ojabo just got there first.
Yeah, I mean, Ojabo had a monster game, 2.5 sacks. He had the forced fumble as well, and really, one of the problems is we called this before the game, is that their pass protection of their tackles, like Alex was like, these guys can't
do
it.
Yeah.
And so you're less like, all right, their left tackle. We beat Wisconsin's left tackle a lot.
That did not feel like a Wisconsin left. That didn't feel like any of the left tackles we faced this year. Like, I think he was worse than the Washington guy.
Yeah, it's been unfortunate that the pregame scouting Alex is doing has been so good, because it's always like, this team isn't very good. And then they're not very good. And then we're like, oh, it's hard to get hype.
Yeah. I mean, that's college football, though. I mean, everybody, like, Georgia goes up against Arkansas, top 10 team, and, like, these guys aren't very good.
Yeah. But in any case, so Hutchinson has the play where he's held and his like two guys are holding him, and he's like yelling at the officials for the flag, and the flag comes out, and someone else sacked him, and that would have been a Hutchinson sack.
Yep.
There were a couple other instances. Full fledged top five NFL draft pick playing like it. You get Ojabo coming in, and then Michigan's front. This is another problem about trying to get hype. Is we knew that this wasn't a very good Wisconsin ground game.
Whoa, but. We knew it was not a very – we knew it was not the Wisconsin ground game.
Right.
But there are some stars on that offensive line.
Well, not in this game.
Exactly.
Their running backs went 5 carries, 19 yards, 3.8. 8 carries, 18 yards, 2.3. 6 carries, 13 yards, 2.2. They got absolutely smoked. And one of the guys who really kind of leapt out to me when I did a rewatch was Mike Morris.
Yes.
Because there was a play where he took an offensive lineman and shoved him all the way across their front. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wasn't expecting that. And so he's a guy who, I mean, he has a sack in this game, a half a sack, you know, rotates in. Mm-hmm. Infrequently, still has 2 solo tackles, and that's huge. Getting solo tackles from defensive linemen against Wisconsin is not a common occurrence, especially when those are like at the line of scrimmage. So we've seen him flash in the first 4 games, and this felt like a test he was passing.
Yeah. I mean, he is the Wormley of this defense, and like sometimes he's playing a defensive tackle, and he's much better at that than I think anyone imagined he was going to be.
Well, he's a, like...
And then he's like an outside linebacker as well.
Spot.
Well, he's... No. He is technically the same position as Hutchinson. He's technically right. The same as like sharing with Upshaw, but they also will move him into the tackle position right along with Jenkins and Hinton and all those guys. And I think the play you're thinking of, he actually was in a tackle position in that...
His hand was in the dirt.
Yeah. Yeah, so... I mean, his versatility gives this defense an option to be multiple, like they said they wanted to be, and he's showing that he's good at both of them. And like I was like, okay, Don Brown anchor, he's probably going to be good at the anchor stuff. Being good at the tackle stuff is kind of eye opening, and making them be able to get away without having to use some of the backups that weren't as good during the year. I mean, there was a drive with Spate in here. There were some Jeter things again, too. But, like, there's just a lot more Jenkins, a lot more Morris. And those are young guys who are going to be bigger next year. So, like, if you're trying to project where this team's going, like, it's really exciting, I think, to see both those guys coming up.
Yeah, because you've got Hinton and Mozzie, who will be back next year. Mm-hmm. You have Morris coming up. I think Jenkins will probably be pretty good last year. Like, this now looks like a spot that might not be all that worrying.
And Mozzie and Hinton had good games again.
Yeah, and I mean, I watched Spate absolutely stone a Wisconsin 3rd-and-1, and I was like, is that good news or not? I can't.
I mean, Spate has stood up. Spate's never going to get you a super play, but he'll stand up. He just kind of, you know.
Sure.
And the lower he has to go just to stay in that spot, he will go. He'll go down to his knees if he has to. You know, there are still a lot of plays where, you know, one of the tackles gets pushed back. But Mozzie knocked down that screen. I mean, that was a play that Rutgers almost made on us. And this time, like, he got back and like, knew where to be when he got... And then he... they had Caden Lyles at center. And Caden Lyles is the guy who got passed by the new center. But, like, he's still a good player. And we starred him last year. So, like, I don't think that, like, the interior of Wisconsin's line is that different than a normal Wisconsin line. And you pair that with Hinton having a great game last week as well, and maybe, like, we got something there.
Yeah. It does feel like we have yet to go up against an offense with a pulse, though.
it's right? Fair. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm still, like, withholding, like, final, like, okay, this defense is now, like, a top 20 defense after being 100-something in last year.
Right.
So, like, it's still, like, I want to see them go up against someone who's done something.
Well, their coverage has not really been tested yet. Nobody we played has a very good passing game yet. And Washington kind of got to them a little bit. Rutgers hit underneath them. So, I mean, Penn State game looms. Ohio State obviously looms. Like,
I mean, Nebraska's coming up. They just did a number on Northwestern, but
yeah, I mean, that Northwestern is so bad. Like, Nebraska had like a walk-on running back who outran everybody on Northwestern's defense.
Yeah, but
and it was not fast. It was like Buffalo Stampede style.
Martinez probably is the best quarterback Michigan
have
faced this year by some distance.
That is fair.
Which doesn't mean he's great, but they've got a pulse. They scored some points.
What they're gonna try to do is grind us down. They're gonna, I think, do the same thing they did against Oklahoma. It's just make it a short game. And Michigan struggled against Rutgers with that kind of offense that uses the quarterback in the running game and makes you cover everybody. We can get into that later, but like that matchup might not be exactly what we want. And Wisconsin, like, we could bring our safeties down. We were not worried about Graham Mertz beating us.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a break, come back, talk some fourth downs.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. And now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, to make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
I got the big D.
in Jason's car. Give me your hottest takes. I need them now.
Beth, are you going to go first?
Beth, go give take now, hot.
John O'Neill's crew just officiated the best game I've seen in years.
Okay, but they did try to, like, screw us out of obvious fumble recoveries on two separate occasions?
That's because that's what they do. They always they don't know. They let the replay booth sort it out. But, like, everything
and
else,
they
like...
They missed the Haskins touchdown when he, like, was laying on a guy.
Yeah, I didn't say they were perfect.
Sure.
I didn't say they were perfect. But, like, as far as how I want officiating to go, I could live with this in every single game and just be fine. Like, the way that they called pass interference and didn't call it downfield, the way that they were right on it when we were offsides one time. Like, they officiate... I thought that, like, they... Both teams like did not hold too much, and they let enough go that it was proper.
It was an advantage that Wisconsin's tackles couldn't even get close enough to hold. That's the one, like Aiden Hutchinson.
That was it. You want your officiating to be like your uncle at Thanksgiving. You know he's going to make one or two mistakes, but you're just trying to live.
Just as long as he stops offering alcohol to the children.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Nobody
and
sit on his lap.
Doesn't lay on your couch. And lay on the couch and unbutton his pants to watch the Lions.
That's
game.
Right. All right, Jay, you ready?
Jason Sklar, give me your hottest take.
The last 15 years of Michigan football will make it impossible for us to enjoy a single win this season when it happens.
That's not a hot take.
I mean, literally. The fact that we came into this game an underdog against this Wisconsin team is a joke. No one, not even the odds makers, were like, Michigan, you should enjoy this. Like, everyone is instilling doubt and fear. And Seth knows because I text him during the game. And you know, Brian, we are on a ledge the entire game, and we are literally ready to burn it all down at the sight of one thing. And that's 15 years in the making.
Do you know those people who like have like little pictures of the Madonna in their wallets?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You could get like a Juwan Howard one.
Yeah, that would help. That would help. Yeah, because we don't feel that way about basketball quite the same way. But like, and I know Randy and I are worse than most people, but everyone we knew was terrified about this game. And even throughout, like as soon as they got that late touchdown first half, everyone was like, well, here we go. This is where it falls apart. Well, and you're like,
all right,
what?
All right.
How?
That was a lukewarm take, Jay.
All right. Randy, give me your hottest take.
Daxton Hill needs to be burned by a bad touchdown in order to unlock the 5-star
So if he gets burned by a touchdown, but the trade-off is that he knocks out the number one quarterback of the team in the next quarter and makes an interception and some ridiculous PBUs and great, I'm okay with that. I'm willing to trade a touchdown for their number one quarterback, and he played at a, I felt like he played at a level. He always has it because he's a star and he's great, and I'm sure he grades out wonderfully.
And Wolf, caveats aside, that was a great interception. He baited that.
Sure. And
totally
like,
baited.
Even like the two throws he gave up at the end of the first half, those were pretty hard to defend because they were perfectly placed. So
yeah,
he wasn't out of position. Those are like Graham Mertz showing you what Graham Mertz could do. So that was my first one. I've got two more. Do you want to hear them?
No, that's not how the segment works.
They're paying. Fine. It's their dollar. They can do whatever they want to. This is sponsors rules.
Customer. All right, Randy, give me your second hottest take.
Jay Harbaugh, while doing a great job as special teams coach, needs to pay for therapy for the entire fan base because of that squib kick.
Randy, give me your third hottest take.
Mike McDonald is so good, he will become the most famous Mike McDonald even more than the Doobie Brother.
I mean, that's just going to happen over time. I think that might already be the case. All right. Have we expended the hot takes?
Yes, I'm
all out of hot takes.
You're all out of hot takes.
That's not true.
Here's mine. Iowa-Wisconsin will be the worst top five matchup in the history of college football.
You mean Iowa-Penn State?
Whatever.
Yeah, what? I was like,
Penn
Wisconsin,
State.
Wisconsin is not going up.
Sorry. Sorry. Iowa-Penn State.
Keep it.
Iowa's 4, Penn State's 5. No, yeah. Penn State's 4, Iowa's 5.
Uh-huh.
Iowa's not any good.
Neither is anybody.
Dude, the coaches,
the whole top
in
10
the
losses
poll, Iowa's 3 and Penn State is 4.
What? That's
yeah.
If worst top a, 4 matchup of all time.
If you're not a fan of Iowa football, there's no way you want to turn on one of those games.
Yeah, you have to be a sadist.
That's like saying I watch NASCAR for the pit stop.
Yeah.
All right, if you'd like us to continue doing this very silly segment, please subscribe to the Sklar's podcast, listen to it, view from the cheap seats, and subscribe to their Patreon as well. They're coming to the Comedy Showcase October 23rd.
22nd and
23rd.
It's the Northwestern weekend, Friday and Saturday night. We have one show Friday, two shows Saturday, but if we sell those shows out, which there's a very distinct possibility, we'd love to see all of you MGO bloggers there. We can add a second show on Friday night. The shows are going to be really fun. Zach Martina, who is a fantastic local comedian, he's going to be featuring for us. Just going to be a lot. You guys know, you guys came out to the shows last time. They're a lot of fun.
Yes, they are. So come out, see it, and we'll continue breaking my voice.
Also, if you want to have your own hot takes, put them in the reviews of the Sklar's podcast. That's where they go.
Right.
On yes. iTunes.
So
yes,
Randy's going to start doing that right now because he's probably got 16
I've got
18
more guys. I'm just going to put them down.
All right.
All right, boys. Enjoy.
Thank you, guys.
All right, moving on from that extremely silly business. Michigan came out, and they go for 2 fourth downs on their first drive. They get the first one. They do not get the second one. Wisconsin has the good, polite behavior to go 3 and out immediately. And then Michigan is making a lot of decisions the rest of this game. So their first touchdown, they have a 4th and 2 mm-hmm. where they call timeout. They go to America's rollout out. They convert, and then the flea flicker is the very next play.
Yep.
So they get up 7-0, and then there's another decision in plus territory that I think is 4th and.
So I've got the whole list. Okay, I prepped this and like I was going to ask you like okay I'll give you the situation and then all you right. tell me what we should do. So I mean the first two 4th and 1 the M34, they dive with Haskins. Obviously they went for it. I'm sure you're down with every 4th and 1. Yeah. So 4th and 2 American rollout out. 4th and 2 is they try to. This is at the UW 48, 7-0, 4:25 in the first quarter. They try to drive him off sides. They don't go for it. Take a delay of game, punt, and then the punt bounces and hits the Wisconsin player, and we're back in business. But like,
right.
that's not part of the equation, really.
The equation does change slightly once you have a lead and their offense looks like total butt.
Because,
you know, when it's tied, you need to score points to win the game, and when you're up 7-0, probably need to score points to win the game, but you probably don't know. So I'm like, I can see why you would go for it in one situation and then why you might have that tilt towards a punt in a second situation. I'm still going in plus territory there.
Yeah, I mean, the chances are your punt's going to go out of bounds or go through the end zone.
Well, Robbins has been good at dropping them in, and so I feel like it's more defensible, but you know, if you're up 14-0,
yeah,
I can see the punt, right?
Yeah.
Like, That seems like a situation.
That one was 7-0. But like it still felt like 14-0 at that point.
Like
yeah.
Second quarter. I think you want more points there.
All right. So that's the next one. 4th and 3 at the Wisconsin 48. Now we're up 10-0. There's 9:36 left in the second quarter.
And they punted.
They punted.
Yeah, I mean, again, similar situation. You are up 10-0 now, and it's 4th and 3, and that's significantly worse chance to actually convert,
right?
Especially with this run defense, which also changes your equation. So, like, if you're going up against an average run defense and you're looking at 4th and 2, then you'd be more inclined to do it. For this run defense, it's like,
I mean, when I pulled it, normally 4th and 3 at the 48 is like a go for it all the time to me. But like, I pulled it and I was surprised that it was that close because in my mind I was like, oh yeah, we should punt it here. Like I didn't feel bad.
No, I didn't either. Yeah. Because of the game state, right? Because of their defense, because their offense is so bad, and
right.
I thought.
All right, next one was 4th and 1 at midfield, 13-10, 11:53 left in the third quarter.
I mean, then they went for it.
They went for it and got it with Haskins. Yeah.
I mean, then you're in a game and you need points, right?
Right. All right, 4th and goal on the 1-inch line, skipping a review on the Haskins touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, that's a clear go for it. Like, it's the 1-inch line.
Well, it was a clear go for it. I would have waited for the result of the review.
Yeah, I mean, they wanted a tempo to get it in. I guess they got it in, but that was already a touchdown. So.
Yeah, and they needed a bush push to get it. I don't think the surprise of a QB sneak in that situation is worth losing the opportunity to win a review. And that review could have gone 50-50, but, like, it's another shot, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it worked. They Bush-pushed McCarthy in there, and they got it. But, you know, and then the last one was 4th-and-1 on the Michigan 36. It's 20-10, just under a minute left in the third quarter.
Wait, what? Say that again?
4th-and-1 on the Michigan 36. Okay, we're up by 10 points. You're up,
I mean, that's a punt, right? Like,
okay, yeah, and they just it's like 55 seconds left in the third quarter.
Right, that's a punt.
Okay,
like, there's no
yeah,
and their backup quarterback's in. You're up by 10 at that point. Variance is your foe. Just punt.
Right, right, like, right.
You know,
yeah. I was fine with that one too. But 4th-and-1, you know, 4th-and-1 on the chart is always a go. But I think that was the point that in the game situation, I didn't hate any of these decisions, and I liked some of them a lot.
There was the one I had some sort of small disagreement with, that like 4th-and-2 and the
yeah, and taking the delay of game one.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. I would have gone for it there, but like again, given this defense, hard to make those calls on 4th-and-2. Easier to make them on 4th-and-1, and the appropriate level of aggressiveness that got Michigan points, right?
Like, yeah.
If they kick a field goal from the 1-inch line, if they don't go for it and then immediately get the flea flicker, this feels like a different game.
Yeah.
So that was very good. And I thought Michigan was more aggressive than I've ever seen them in that situation, and appropriately so. All right. AJ Henning. 3 punt returns, averages 12 yards a return.
Yeah.
Huge in a game like this. That's like 37 yards of field position that you desperately needed. And particularly, Michigan gets backed up.
Yep.
On their own 1. They managed to get it out, 1 first down, and then they punt from their 17. They get the ball back after a 3-and-out from Wisconsin on their 40.
Yeah.
And that...
And that was just all in the punt.
Well, and they were Henning return.
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, Henning, like, same dodging way, a couple of guys and making, you know, 12... I mean, a first down out of nothing, and that's like in, yeah, this game, that's huge. So, and Brad Robbins, I don't know if he allowed a single punt return. I don't think so.
Technically, the one that bounced and hit a Wisconsin player becomes a return, but that's it.
So
other than Brandon Williamsing, that was.
So they get nothing out of that, and Michigan is able to get some key special teams plays that aren't like the guy dorfed it off his butt. Like,
well, and Robbins, once again, I mean,
Alex is trying to give me credit for, like, yeah, you mentioned special teams on the podcast. I wasn't talking about, like, a dorfing off a guy's butt. That's just complete randomness.
We were talking on the podcast about Henning versus, like, the tryhards that Wisconsin puts out there, yeah, on their special teams.
And then Robbins, who doesn't give you returns.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was a big difference. And then Moody...
all three.
Chip shot, and then drew the other two in from just inside 50.
And that one, it's like, no, wait a minute.
Yeah. So special teams, major, major importance here. The one thing that did great,
uh-huh,
was the pop-up kickoff right before the half.
Yeah.
Literally all of Moody's kickoffs are going in the end zone, and nobody's bothering to return them. So,
and Wisconsin's not going to try any offense from the 25.
Yeah, I mean,
if they get a 9-yard run to start from the 25, I think it feels different than they still don't think. I think they're going to throw it downfield. Like,
maybe.
this is the leading interception thrower in the conference, and you want to start.
I mean, I don't know. They're, yeah. I think they might have tried it after the 9-yard run, but those yards that you gave up with your pop-up kick, it turned out to be pretty valuable, right?
Because
It's possible, especially given the time, it's possible that they would have required another play to score, and then after that play, you might be looking at an opportunity to play another down, force them into a field goal. So that make a whole lot of sense to me.
If the first play goes to the 38 instead of the 18, because that's the 20 yards you gave up, It's a different throw. They can't just do a back shoulder fade into the corner of the end zone at that point, or unless they want to have like the ball in the air forever.
Right. So I can kind of understand. I don't want to give up a kickoff return here, so I'm just going to pop it up. But given the fact that they weren't returning him anyway,
yeah.
I mean, I guess you might change your rules there because you need a big return. Well, but the chances of that are so slim.
There was, I mean, because Wisconsin almost botched that, and for a moment Michigan had the ball in the pile. And they could tell because Jenkins and Green were, like, all of a sudden, like, pointing, like, we got it, and
people,
jumping
up. People do that.
They do it all the time. But these two guys simultaneously see something in the pile and jump. I'm not saying Michigan deserved to keep the ball.
You can't pop it up like that and be like, that was part of our process, our thought process, is that we were
going to make them pop it. No, when you pop it up, part of the thought process is there's a much higher chance of a turnover. That's kind of what you do in that situation. Like, you're popping it up to,
we're spending way too much time on, like, 15 yards. I think that's what we're doing.
Yeah, sorry, the end of that half felt bad, Brian. That was the only time I felt bad on Saturday.
Yeah, well, that's different.
That and watching Ohio State / Rutgers to death.
Well, all right, take a break, come back, talk to Jamie.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit prentice4m.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across Southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality, for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. It feels normal again. Like, Michigan is good, and it worries me, but it all is balanced out by how bad Indiana football is. So we feel that we're inching back to normal.
I said that there was one good game of the week before we started recording. That's not correct. There was one competitive game. It was Minnesota 20, Purdue 13. This was an upset because Minnesota's offense has completely fallen apart, and they didn't really get off the mat in this one, but Purdue just did not take advantage of a massive yardage edge.
Yeah, that massive yardage edge came during two phases of the game. The first quarter, they had about 100-yard edge, and they fumbled the ball, which gave Minnesota a short field touchdown. That was their first drive, but then they had two long drives, and they got a touchdown and a field goal out of it, but they were only up 10-7. And then they had a huge yardage edge as we came down the stretch in this game. They gained 164 yards on their final three drives, but they missed a field goal, a 37-yard field goal, a short one. They had a turnover on downs on the Minnesota 20, and then they had an interception on their final drive at the Minnesota 27. So there were a lot of chances there for Purdue, and it's just another close loss for the Jeff Brom era.
Yeah, because this Minnesota team has fallen off a cliff. Like, they had all the RPO stuff that they were running a couple years ago, and it kind of looks like they're doing the same stuff, and the other teams have adapted, and they're not up to snuff with, they can't do other things.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, like, they have, other than Michigan and the service academies, they are the next non-passing team in the country. And
oh, the Gophers?
The Gophers yeah. are, yeah. And I mean,
I didn't realize that. I've seen that stat all year with Michigan and the service academies. I didn't know Minnesota was
Minnesota's
that far down
like
there.
Right there with us. And like, Tanner Morgan had 18 passes in this game for 169 yeah. yards. But like, I think that when you talk about what they're taking away is any passing opportunities and saying like, okay, run the ball into us, RPO team.
Yeah.
Well, also, Purdue had a lot of drives stall because their quarterback took huge sacks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Aiden O'Connell's long run in this game was negative 10 yards. this is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, minus 44 here in the box score for his total. And, you know, two third quarter drives ended in sacks. And I think that the drive where they had to settle for a field goal in the first quarter was a sack somewhere in that series that sort of, you know, forced the field goal instead of allowing the drive to move on.
Yeah.
The one good thing, or I should say the one thing Minnesota might be able to lean on in the passing attack the rest of the season is if Chris Upman-Bell can stay healthy. He missed the first two games. He missed most of the BG game, and his absence is not an excuse for them to lose to Bowling Green. But the two games that he's played this year, Colorado and Purdue, you know, he's had three big plays, and they've all led to scores. And yesterday, Mark Stevens Brown, a wide receiver with a running back number 22, had a couple of big passes. So, you know, when they're playing like Northwestern and Illinois and stuff down the stretch, you know, if they have Upman-Bell, I think they can win those games still.
All right. Sorry to do this to you, Jamie. We're going to move on to Penn State 24, Indiana nothing. Mike Penix goes out midway through this game. He was broken even before, 118 yards on 22 attempts, one pick. And then Jack Tuttle comes in and doesn't really do a whole lot better. And they're just, you know, people were hype about this team because Penix has been a really good Big Ten quarterback when he's been on the field, and just kind of feels like he was already in Devin Gardner mode, just couldn't hack it anymore, and then he goes down. So it's pretty grim out there for the Hoosiers.
Yeah, it's definitely a sad story, you know, for him, because he sort of was part of the lightning rod that, you know, got this program in the national eye. He's never really been able to stay healthy, and you know, there's a lot of national talk about how De'Aaron King is struggling after his late season ACL. Well, this kid tore his ACL Thanksgiving weekend last year. Yeah, he's just never really been the same. He is not helped out though by the overall offensive philosophy and game plan of the team.
Nick Sheridan is the offensive coordinator, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Four of the five Tom Allen years, the offensive coordinator has either been Mike DeBoard or Nick Sheridan. They had Kalen DeBoer there in year three, who was really good. But yeah, it's just not a very imaginative offense. Ace over at the Bucket Problem ID'd him as like IU's weakest link, as when he did his post on their future Michigan's future opponents. And one thing he pointed out was that they were only averaging 3.3 yards per carry on first and second down runs, only converting a first down 14% of the time. They were a little bit better than that yesterday at 3.9 yards a run on first and second down. Not much better, But half those yards were gained in garbage time after it was 24-0. So if you take those out, you were looking at 12 carries, 33 yards, 2.8 yards a carry, and they didn't get a single first down on a first or second down run until they got a total run in garbage time. So
yeah,
that I mean, all played out.
Stephen Carr is supposed to, I mean, he was a five-star. He was, you know, looked fairly good at USC. They just had like several other guys there, but like he has not looked good at all at Indiana. I don't know if he's in, he got an injury history or something like that, but he's looked slowed down. Yeah. And like, you know, we took like, heart from them too. So
I think some of it is the offensive line at Indiana is probably not nearly as good as the offensive line at USC. Cause I agree with you. I was excited when he came over to Indiana. Cause I always thought when he got the ball for USC, he was a difference maker, but you know, when nobody's blocking for you, it doesn't really matter.
And they're still not playing Zach Carpenter, correct?
They are not. He is not first string, which that surprises me.
So maybe he left because Vastardis was going to play ahead of him.
The Penn State half of this, this is one of those games where the other offense isn't doing anything, so you can really kind of put it in the barn. So Clifford has 33 attempts, only 178 yards, and 84 of those are to Jahan Dotson, who has a 30-yard touchdown and another score. And then kind of the rest of it was just kind of dinking and dunking underneath, which he's been fairly proficient at. But
The Dotson throw was dinking dunk, too. I mean, he escaped the pocket, and he was about to get knocked out of bounds, and then they left Dotson all alone. So he just kind of flipped it to him for a couple yards, and then Dotson just kind of, you know, zigzagged through the rest of the defense.
Yeah, his completion percentage here is not good when he's not throwing to Dotson. So if you can put someone on Dotson, and then, but that's kind of a tall order. And the only person that Michigan could probably put on Dotson is Dax Hill. Mm-hmm. And that's not what you can do with an outside receiver and a safety, really. So I think that you're just going to have to grin and bear it when they come to town. Clifford did rush for 58 yards in this game, which is a huge part of their offense. They got a 44-yard run from, oh, God. Can they just have the same running back for 2 weeks in a row?
No, never not at Penn State.
Tavon Lee,
yeah.
And then they just kind of ground out the rest of the game. So I wouldn't really put a whole lot into the down to down efficiency here.
Yeah.
But they are pretty heavily dependent on Dotson. But that's a good guy to be heavily dependent on, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Not to take anything away from his performance against the Hoosiers, but it's worth mentioning that Tywan Mullen was a scratch in this game. He got hurt against Western Kentucky and was not able to make the bell in this one. So maybe that would have, you know, kept him down a little bit. He's their best guy in their secondary. And they also had Taylor Reese and Raheem Lane going in and out of the game a lot with injuries. So they've been banged up in the secondary. But without Mullen, you know, that's a ripe time for your best receiver to go off.
All right, the Sickos game of the week. Nebraska 56, Northwestern 7, 657 yards for Nebraska, 427 of them on the ground.
Yeah.
Northwestern's out here giving up 60-yard, 80-yard touchdowns to guys who aren't even on scholarship.
Yeah.
What is going on?
Yeah. Where art thou, Patty Fisher? I mean, come on.
Where are their Hankins? It's Mike Hankins that they miss the most. Like, this defense looks so badly coached. And when has that ever been true for Northwestern?
That's true, yeah. I definitely agree. I mean, you know, IU had a decent defense last year. They're having transition costs with the new defensive coordinator. Northwestern is having something worse than transition costs with their new defensive coordinator. Nebraska gained 85% of their total yards available and averaged 63.7 yards per drive. They scored a touchdown on their first four drives, and they scored a touchdown on eight of their 11 total drives in the game. And one of the drives they didn't score a touchdown on was they actually killed the last 7 minutes and 18 seconds of this game mercifully with an 11-play drive that they didn't score on.
Yeah. So Northwestern has major, major talent issues. And I when they're getting run around by the walk-on, it's like,
also,
I like that walk-on, by the way. He looks like he's an interesting story. He's lost 25 pounds since the start of camp, according to Frost. And he had a lot of hype about him this summer, but he's finally fit enough to play.
And his name is Yant.
Adding insult to injury for the Wildcats is that Nebraska only punted once in this game and it went 84 yards.
I know.
Big Ten. All right.
Yeah.
Michigan State 48, Western Kentucky 31, in a game that was not nearly as competitive as the final score makes it sound. Michigan State roared out to like a 42-12 lead or something strange like that.
Well, Western Kentucky kept on getting field goals. Like they kept on driving down and then kicking a field goal, and then Michigan State would oh, we can throw it to Reed and run around your defense.
Yeah, yeah, so the numbers in this one are pretty wild because Western's quarterback was 46 of 63 for 489 yards, and one of their receivers caught 17 passes.
Yeah. Passing offense for a group of five is 100% legit. That quarterback and offensive coordinator combo have been with each other at two different schools, and they're clicking.
They are. But I mean, I think Michigan State might have some secondary issues. Because didn't they make Hunter Johnson look sort of like a functional Big Ten quarterback in the opener?
And I think that their starting cornerback that everyone thought was going to be good is transferring.
Yeah,
Kalon Gervin transferred, but I don't think he was playing much.
Well, he was their only – that kid was their only scholarship cornerback during spring football.
Yes.
And then they had a freshman come in, and then they've had the Alabama transfer Williams, and then the Florida transfer Kimbrough. Those guys during September passed him, and that's why he transferred. But I don't necessarily think that means those corners are, you know, like good necessarily. It felt like they were having open tryouts all September, and they got torched last night.
They're playing some very simple coverages. So, like, you can tell there's a team that, like, everyone's still wearing name tags and don't really trust each other out there, know each other out there. I mean, they've known each other for a couple months at this point.
Yeah. And I kind of want to go back to what you said, Seth. This could have been a close game. You know, the Hoosiers played Western Kentucky last week, and the story of that game was IU settling for too many field goals, keeping the game close. And in this game, Michigan State got touchdowns on all their drives, and Western Kentucky kept getting into the red zone and settling for field goals. And unfortunately, they took some penalties and some sacks, so they were in some situations where they couldn't go for it. They had a fourth and goal, for example, on the 19. Mm-hmm. And then they got in the red zone on their opening drive of the first half, and they had the same thing. They had actually not a penalty sack. They had two penalties, and they had another fourth and long from like the 20, and the guy got tackled at the one. But they're, you know, in a perfect world for Western Kentucky, this could have been 42-31-ish in the third quarter. And that's kind of what their deficit was in the third quarter against Indiana. And they made a late push and almost won. Western Kentucky averaged 9.7 plays a drive. They gained 73% of their available yards, and they averaged 54.1 yards per drive.
Yeah, and
they could not stop Michigan State to save their lives. I mean, Kenny Walker had another good game against a bad opponent.
They had another punt return.
Reed was great.
Yep.
Yeah, another punt return touchdown from him.
Yeah, so Sparty's annoying because like they can dial it up when they need it. And I think that was part of that whole field goal fest too, which is not what you want to see as a Michigan fan about Michigan State.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully Reed won't have any opportunities to do anything on special teams because of Brad Robbins.
Yeah.
Huge hang.
So Michigan State plays at Rutgers and at Indiana before they play Michigan. They could be 7-0. Although I have hope for Rutgers. Less hope for my alma mater, but I have hope for that Rutgers game.
All right, congratulations to Maryland for making it to week 5 before completely melting down. That's a new record for them. Iowa 51, Maryland 14. I think Tagovailoa's 5 interceptions are probably the headline for this one.
Yeah. Only one pick coming in to this game. And, you know, that was the matchup. You know, can he keep the ball out of Iowa's hands, you know, against the Iowa defense that leads the country in interceptions since 2017? And yeah, the answer was no. Fumble on a kickoff didn't help either. They had that second quarter disaster where it was just 10-7 Iowa, but they had a Tagovailoa interception, gave the Hawkeyes a short field. The fumble on the ensuing kickoff gave them a short field, and then another turnover later in the quarter gave them another short field. And that's, you know, I don't know if you guys believe in football magic, and I don't know if that's what Iowa has, but it seems like every important spot this year, they've gotten like a, you know, big play pick six situation, or what, three turnovers against Iowa State on an 8-play sequence by the Cyclones, and what you saw against Maryland. And, you know, part of me, you know, there's nothing really to like about this offense at all. We said it last week. This might be the worst top five team ever, but you know, they keep getting these sequences that knock the game out well before it should be knocked out.
Maryland also has a policy of not covering tight ends on rollouts, which against Iowa seems to be a problem.
Yeah. Not covering tight ends is a problem against Iowa, period.
We should note that wide receiver Dante Demas, Maryland's best player and one of the leaders in the Big Ten in receiving yardage, is got knocked out of this game, left on a cart.
Mm-hmm.
Availability is questionable for the rest of the season, so that'll be a blow to them.
Yeah, that could be an interesting loss. You know, I believe in Rakeem Jarrett, and he's got to step up. He only has like 5 catches for 21 yards the last 2 games, which so he's been slumping, and obviously he needs to break out of that slump.
Well, the defenses have been focusing on him, and I think that's what opened things up for Demas. So, I mean, that's going to be a big problem for them if teams can just tee off on Jarrett.
Right.
Do we need to talk about Charlotte, Illinois?
It was the closest game in the Big Ten this week.
No, not quite, because the Minnesota-Purdue game was a 7-point game. All right, Ohio State Rutgers, Rutgers feisty against Michigan, 52-13. Doesn't feel good for that to happen in the immediate aftermath of Michigan's second half.
Right.
I thought that Ohio State scouted a lot of things that Rutgers was doing to Michigan and directly attacked them in ways that Michigan...
I mean, okay, but like...
It felt rivalric. It felt like, you know, hey Michigan, we know you're watching. This is what you could have done to Rutgers.
All right.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't think.
I thought this whole game was weird to me from the start because for some reason, Ohio State was only a 15-point favorite.
And what?
They were only a 15-point favorite. Last 5 years, the average Vegas point spread in this game was 38.2 points. And 2 years ago on this field, Ohio State was a 52-point favorite. Rutgers somehow fooled the odds makers into thinking they shouldn't have been that big of an under. They should have been a small underdog, and that was obviously a mistake. This game was never competitive. Rutgers tried a fake punt on their second drive that Cameron Martinez intercepted. And then they also had a pick six, I think, on Rutgers' next drive. So before anybody knew it, it was 21-0.
Yeah, and, you know, Stroud passed for about 15 yards an attempt, which is pretty good. So this is fuel for our – we're not going to go no Lucy talk on this podcast until possibly Michigan beats Michigan State or Penn State.
Yeah.
No Lucy talk.
You said Penn State. Yeah. We're going to stick with Penn State. Yeah, Penn State, yeah.
All right, thank you, Jamie. We'll talk to you next week.
For listening to MGO Podcast, I'm Seth Fisher, along with Brian Cook. Pack it up, pack it up. Let me begin. I came to win. Battle me. That's a sin.
Right. Perfect. And Jay will have a microphone next time.
I had another one that I didn't do, but
nope, you're not doing it.
It's too late.
A